Hello, my name is Ben Burrell and welcome back to Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that takes an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. So season two is almost at an end, I know. I've really enjoyed making these episodes for you. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Season three is going to come later in the year and I want you to tell me which albums I should cover during that season. You can tweet me at Bob Dylan Podcast. You can find me again on Instagram at Bob Dylan Podcast, and also you can drop me an email via bobdylanpodcast.com. I think I've said the words Bob and Dylan way too much in the last 30 seconds, but do get in contact and tell me which albums you would like to hear during season three. Let's crack on and have a look at this classic album once again. This is 1964's The Times There Are Changing.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving.
While this album is often talked about as being one of the most iconic records ever made, I'd say it's not one of the best. There's rightfully a lot to love here, but it never hits the heights of the classic 60s trio that would follow. In fact, a quick look at a Dylan fan poll in Rolling Stone shows us the LP didn't even make the top 10. It was beaten out by the likes of John Wesley Harding and Oh Mercy. Where this album does hit highs, though, is in terms of its cultural impact. The record sets the bar for the protest song. Dylan didn't invent this genre, if we can call it that, but he has become the poster boy for it, whether he likes it or not. He helped to bring this type of song to the mainstream. It's a type of song that has socially aware lyrics that are wrapped up in accessible melodies and delivered by a man who's not only intelligent enough to enter into a debate his lyrics raise, but also a man who acts like a star, making them much more accessible. When Bruce Springsteen inducted Bob into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, he said, "Bob freed your mind in the way Elvis freed your body." He showed us that just because music was innately physical, it didn't mean it was anti-intellectual. Dylan paved the way for other musicians and thinkers and whole genres to follow. There's parts of rap, for example, that Dylan had an effect on. His stark discussion of issues in song meant that acts like Public Enemy or N.W.A. could be like they were. I'm not saying for a minute that N.W.A. or Public Enemy wouldn't have existed without Dylan in the way they did, but Bob's success, I'm sure, made record companies even decades later much more open to signing acts that were socially aware. In fact, Def Jam's publicist pitched Chuck D to editors of music magazines as the new Bob Dylan. And after Bob recited his lyrics on his radio show, LL Cool J confessed his love for our curly-haired hero. There's no doubt this album was a big cultural influence, and a lot of that is down to the title track. Its longevity as a protest anthem has meant it's often used as a shortcut in different guises for different situations. The song has been adopted many times, in fact many times by the business world, and used to advertise its products. In 1996, The Times There Are Changing was licensed for use in a television advertisement where a children's choir sang the song's melody for Canada's Bank of Montreal. The same thing happened in 2005 for an insurance company. Of course, Steve Jobs, in his now iconic unveiling of the Macintosh computer, recited the second verse, essentially holding its cultural impact to hostage.
Come writers and critics who prophesize with your pens, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win, for the times, they are a-changing. Now...
Whilst you might not agree with this use, it demonstrates the song's success. It's used to bring authenticity to something that otherwise lacks it. In those adverts, it almost becomes an instant cup of culture, which proves just how strong the song's association with change and morality is. This strength comes from a confidence in the song. Dylan isn't afraid to speak out, something that is littered all over this album. It's not an album where Bob calls out different people on every track, but he never hides behind any smoke and mirrors either. On track 5, North Country Blues, we hear Bob speaking out for a poor US community that's being ripped apart.
Come and gather round, friends, and I'll tell you a tale of when the red iron armpits run aplenty, but the cardboard filled windows and old men on the benches tell you now that the whole town is empty.
The song focuses on a mining community that has fallen on hard times. After some introductions on the first 4 verses, we're faced with a cruel turn of events as the mine closes. Bob sings, "Oh, the years passed again and the giving was good, with the lunch bucket filled every season. What with 3 babies born, the work was cut down to half a day's shift with no reason. Then the shaft was soon shut, and more work was cut, and the fire in the air, it felt frozen, till a man came to speak, and he said in 1 week that the number 11 was closing.
How the years passed again, and the giving was good. With a lunch bucket filled every season. But with three babies born, the work was cut down to a half a day shift with no reason. Then the shaft was soon shut and my work was cut. And the fire in the air, it felt frozen. Till a man come to speak, and he said in 1 week that number 11 was closing.
In the next verse, we hear why the mine has shut down, as things are much cheaper in South America towns. Once again, just like elsewhere on the LP, it's a bleak tale from here on out. Our narrator tells us about their loved ones drinking before we find out they're then alone with their three children. And if that wasn't enough, our aging narrator then tells us in the final verse their children will then leave them soon. Bob sings, "The summer is gone, the ground's turning cold. The stores, one by one, they're all folding. My children will go as soon as they grow. Well, there ain't nothing here now to hold them.
The summer is gone, the ground's turning cold. The stars, one by one, they're folded. My children will go as soon as they grow. For there ain't nothing here now to hold them."
What I particularly like about this track is how our storyteller is a woman. Something that is confirmed in the fourth verse as Bob sings, "Well, a long winter's wait from the window I watched. My friends, they couldn't have been kinder. And my schooling was cut as I quit in the spring to marry John Thomas, a miner." It's not unheard of, but it's different for a Dylan record, and it's a nice change from the norm. But more importantly, there's no poor woman all on her own vibes either. In fact, gender doesn't really come into it apart from that reveal. The song provides a desolate picture of life that is ruined by poverty, with an industry left to rot. It's classic The Times There Are Changing fodder. However, unlike some of the other tracks which demand accountability, this is just a sorry tale that reinforces the gap between the poor and the people in power. The specific location of the town is never stated. However, there are references to iron ore and red iron, which strongly suggests the location is near Dylan's childhood home in Minnesota, where open pit mining takes place. Which again, just like track 2, The Ballad of Hollis Brown, could be a story from Bob's childhood, or at least something he witnessed in those early years. In fact, the subject matter of this song is interesting away from its details. It's obviously a protest song, but like I stated, it's more a tale of woe masquerading as a protest song. In that respect, it's the sister song to the aforementioned Ballad of Hollis Brown. They both paint a fallow picture of poverty and desperation that in itself acts as a different form of protest, almost exposing this very real situation. This is one of a few types of songs we find on this album. They tend to go in pairs. There's these two cautionary tales, then there's two gloomy love songs in the form of One Too Many Mornings and Boots of Spanish Leather. Then we have our all-out protest songs consisting of The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll and track 6, Only a Pawn in Their Game.
A bullet from the back of a bush took Medgar Evers' blood. A finger fired the trigger to his name. A handle hit out in the dark. A hand set the spark. Two eyes took the aim behind a man's brain. But he can't be blamed. He's only a pawn in their game.
This song is written about the death of the civil rights activist Medgar Evers, who was shot outside his home by Byron Diller Beckwith. Beckwith was found guilty for murder, and while Dylan doesn't glorify his actions, he does proclaim that accountability should be shared with elite white working classes who use tension between poorer white Americans and black Americans to distract them from their positions in society. The song begins with Dylan straight away outlining the event as he sings, "A bullet from the back of the bush took Medgar Evers' blood, a finger fired the trigger to his name." He then puts forward the case for the ruling classes creating racial tension. He sings, "A South politician preached to the poor white man. You've got more than the blacks, don't complain. You're better than them. You've been born with white skin," they explain. And the Negro's name, it is used, it is plain, for the politician's gain as he rises to fame and the poor white remains on the caboose of the train.
The South politician preaches to the poor white man. You got more than the blacks, don't complain. You're better than them, you've been born with white skin, they explain. And the Negro's name is used, it is plain, for the politician's gain as he rises to fame. And the poor white remains on the caboose of the train, but it ain't him to blame, he's only a pawn in their game.
That line about a caboose on the train, which is typically attached to the end, puts us in mind of the white working class being positioned out of the way by politicians via this tension. This is continued on to the next verse, with Dylan singing that the laws are with him to protect his white skin, to keep up his hate, so he never thinks straight about the shape that he's in, but it ain't him to blame, he's only a pawn in their game.
That the laws are with him to protect his white skin, to keep up his hate, so he never thinks straight about the shape that he's in, but it ain't him to blame, he's only a pawn in their game.
It's quite bold for a protest song about the murder of a black civil rights campaigner to also mention the marginalising of parts of the white race too. But you get the feeling Bob is talking from reality. He's outlining what is really happening rather than singing from an idealised vantage point. You feel this is much more real than that. In fact, civil rights activist Bernice Johnson would later tell critic Robert Shelton that this song was the very first song that showed the poor white community which had been victimised as well as the poor black community. This is echoed in the next verse as we hear more about this manufactured hate, before finally we are presented with that glorious final verse that, like others on this album, feels like a swelling alarm with those short, sharp, spiky lines of he'll see by his grave, on the stone that remains, carved next to his name, his epitaph plain, he's only a pawn in their game.
But when the shadowy sun sets on the one that fired the gun, he'll see by his grave, on the stone that remains, carved next to his name, his epitaph plain, only a pawn in their game.
Culturally, this song is fascinating. Not only is Dylan discussing an issue which is a big story at the time, but the song itself is being used by those people in an attempt to solve the very issue Dylan is singing about. Bob first performed the song at a voter registration rally in Greenwood, Mississippi, the very state where Evers was the NAACP field secretary. He also sang the song at the 1963 March on Washington, where Martin Luther King gave his famous I Have a Dream speech. Interestingly, despite the very specific time frame of this song, listening back now, 50 plus years later, it still feels very contemporary. Take those lines from verse 4 again, where Bob tells us, and he's taught how to walk in a pack, shoot in the back, with his fist in a clinch, to hang and to lynch. Which doesn't feel a million miles away from the increased tension we have today with the lights of the Unite for the Right rally. This song, like a lot of others on the album, is in many ways void of emotion. In fact, taking away more obvious personal songs like Boots of Spanish Leather and One Too Many Mornings, you realise just how cold and sterile this album is. I've mentioned this many times before when looking at these songs, but on this track it's particularly noticeable. Let's listen to Bob describing the murder once again. Both his delivery and his lyrics lack any emotion.
A bullet from the back of a bush took Medgar Evers' blood. A finger fired the trigger to his name.
Sure, they're on the sad side, but they seem so unaffected. Even the words he used to describe the actual moment of the shooting are strangely unemotive. He sings, a bullet from the back of a bush took Medgar Evers' blood. Took his blood is such an unusual phrase. It's neither descriptive nor does it express any feelings. It's not overtly emotional in any way. There's no language about flesh being torn or a cold-blooded murder. Compare this to his delivery and lyrics of another murder scene, this time on Desire's Hurricane, and we see just how completely different the whole thing is.
Pistol shots ring out in a barroom night. Enter Betty Valentine from the upper hall. She sees a bartender in a pool of blood. Cries out, my God, they've killed them all. Here comes the story of the...
What does become apparent when listening to these songs side by side is how this lack of emotion on the Times They Are a Changing record actually does it a great service. The lack of any melodrama gives them a cold, hard reality. If Hurricane is a Hollywood movie, then these songs are the documentaries from the front line.
Oh, they murdered 6 million in the ovens they fried. The Germans now to have God on their side.
This lack of affection also gives us a feeling that Dylan was at his wit's end. He sounds so exasperated on these tracks, like he can't be bothered to get wound up about it, like he's speaking out about these issues from a resigned vantage point. This is something that appears to be the mantra on the final track, Restless Farewell.
Oh, all the money that in my whole life I did spend, be it mine right or wrongfully, I let it slip gladly to my friends to tie up the time most forcefully. But if the arrow is straight and the point is slick, it can pierce through dust no matter how thick.
Bob sounds so jaded here. It's no surprise that he would soon depart this protest song period. But before he does, on this final track, he hints at a more complex sound that was just around the corner on some classic records. Although having said that, there is a hidden complexity to the music on this album that is often passed by. And that's something we look at next time. That is it for this episode. Thanks for listening. There's a couple more to go on this album, and the next one I'm really excited for you to hear because we're looking at the sonics of this record, which is interesting because it's not a really sonically advanced record, but there are some really great moments. We'll do that next time. In the meantime, if you can suggest an album for season three, do that at Bob Dylan Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks once again for listening, and until next time, goodbye.